Welcome out, everybody.
Oh, what the hell?
Thanks for joining us, I guess.
Whoa, is this a Biden rally or what the hell?
Well, yeah, okay. I guess they're playing a joke on us, Dave. It's an October.
They really do love me.
Hey guys, welcome back to Mitch and Gordon Part 2. We're looking forward to talking a little bit more with Mitch Shira and with Gordon Hinckley, the resurrected man, the myth. Are going to be joining us on stage again today. I'm excited, Dave. I can see you are as well. If you want to hide that would be nice. There's a blanket.
I'm going to suppress it.
Okay. Yeah. And so, guys, before we jump into that, our typical LDS Church in the News and the four-year information segment with Dave, and then we'll look forward to it because we ran out of time last time. So we're excited to spend a little bit more time with Mitch, digging into a couple more things, and with Gordon. So let's jump into it. Hey, a little bit of the LDS Church in the News. Never fails to entertain me. That's all I care about, Dave, is me. You know that about me, right? I just care about
self-centered
myself.
Self-centered bitch.
Some bitch. Yes. Mormon president calls on members to help end racism. I know we just talked about this recently. This is only 2 days old. God. It's another little tidbit on Rusty Nail. So let's read through here, Dave. And while we read this, and listeners, while you listen, ask yourselves the question, is Nelson discounting anything that might exist in the scriptures that the Mormon church believes in? Okay, just ask that to yourself. Here we go. Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints president issued another plea for members to help end racism, saying Sunday at the Faith Signature Conference that God loves people of all races equally and that it pains him to see black people suffer prejudice. Russell M. Nelson's comments followed similar speeches by other top leaders Saturday at the conference that comes as many members live through a reckoning over racial injustice, especially in the U.S. following the May police killing of black man George Floyd. Here we go with Nelson, quote, God does not love one race more than another. His doctrine on this matter is clear, Nelson said.
Bullshit.
I don't want to dig into this, obviously. It's not the point of the episode today, this particular topic.
No,
but just quickly between you and I, Dave, as you just bounce that off the top of your head, can you think of anything that might discount that statement?
Well, in the next two or three readings from four-year information, there are racial statements again, and it's now in the 1950s, and it still continues. So right up until 78, it was present.
Okay.
Maybe decreased, maybe more subdued.
Yeah.
And just because this revelation came, does that mean it just automatically changed the hearts of the members? No.
I doubt it. Yeah.
No.
And the thing that sticks with me more is there are clear verses in the hallmark scripture of the church, the Book of Mormon, that clearly are racist and clearly show that God does favor one people. You could use the term people as race, right? One people above another. And you'll recall, Dave, one that we've brought up a few times, the verses about the dark and loathsome skin, right? And that if you follow God, he'll make you a white and delightsome people. These kinds of things are very prevalent in the Book of Mormon. So whatever.
Wow.
His quote continues, I assure you that your standing before God is not determined by the color of your skin, at least now, dot, dot, dot. That part I added, obviously. Here we go. Members believe church presidents are living prophets who receive revelations from God. Sure do believe that.
Sure.
Like the leaders who spoke on Saturday, Nelson didn't mention the church's past ban on black men in the lay priesthood. The prohibition, which stood until 1978, was rooted in the belief that black skin was a curse. It remains one of the most sensitive topics in the faith history. The church disavowed the ban and the reasons behind it in 2013 essay that they wrote, but has never issued a formal apology, a necessary step for some members. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I don't think a formal apology will ever come. Let's give one last little tidbit from a Nelson quote at the end of the article here. Quote, I grieve. And I think we have Nelson said he might call in today, Dave. And we'll see if Gordon will allow it, because I know Gordon's pissed at him. I grieve that our black brothers and sisters the world over are enduring the pains of racism and prejudice, Nelson said. Yep. Yeah, nah. That's that. Okay, next quick little story here. Two women file sexual abuse complaints against Nikola founder Trevor Milton. This is about a month old. Well, not a month old. It's a couple of weeks old here. I don't know if you heard about this, Dave. Nikola is like, I guess, I don't know a lot about him. It's like a custom, Mitch might know more. It's a custom truck manufacturing thing. I guess like a Tesla idea. Maybe it's called Nikola from Nikola Tesla. Anyway, the guy who's the founder, Trevor Milton, is this multi-billionaire, whatever. He was also a member. He also supposedly sexually abused a couple girls back in 1999 and early 2000, and has, you know, charges that have been levied against him. And so part of the article is about one of the things that the girls did is they went to their church leaders and explained the issue and told them about the abuse, and the church did what about it?
Nothing.
Evidently. So I'm not going to read through the article here, but that was just kind of a reminder that I guess this started a while ago and we didn't mention it in LDS Church in the news. So just bringing it up. Our listeners probably know a lot more about it than I do. That's it. Just another case of abuse in the LDS Church. And that's all for me, Dave. So I'm looking forward to hearing the next little entries in For Your Information.
Information.
Yes.
All right. So I think I might have mentioned this last week. 1949, the first entry, January 20th, President George Albert Smith begins a week stay in California Lutheran Hospital for his tired nerves. And it goes on a little bit, and then it closes with this statement. A year later, his nurse notes that church president is, quote, very confused, very nervous. 10 days before his death, the nurse adds that George Albert Smith is irrational at times. Prophet is irrational?
You know that who reminds me of? That reminds me of L. Ron Hubbard's last days, where people were saying he was just kind of, he fell off the wagon.
Yeah, he lost his mind.
Yeah.
As if he had possession of it. Anyway, so you just read from The Living Prophet.
Yeah.
February 25th. In discussion of African-American segregation, Second Counselor David O. McKay says, the South knows how to handle them, and they do not have any trouble, and the colored people are better off down there.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Stay down there,
the brothers. South knows how to handle you guys.
All right, completely different topic. Uh-huh. April, Society for Early Historic Archaeology at Brigham Young University first organized an effort to promote study of the Book of Mormon archaeology. Similar efforts have been New World Archaeological Foundation, Foundation for Research on Ancient America, and the one we love most, the Foundation for Ancient Research and Mormon Studies, or FARMS.
Yes. Yeah. So this is when it really
found shit.
Well, this is when it really kicked off, is what you're saying, right? Because over the next several decades, this is in the late 40s now, right? That you're
49.
Over the next several decades, FARMS would do a lot of shit, right? And they did make a lot of discoveries, but the discoveries were not what they claimed they were as far as validation of stuff in the Book of Mormon, right?
All right, another completely different topic, and this, you take it any way you want. April 5th, First Counselor Reuben Clark tells a meeting of bishops, I wish we could get over being flattered into almost anything. If any stranger comes along and tells us how wonderful we are, he pretty nearly owns us.
Very nice.
He admitted it. Okay. June 27th. When state president complains to first presidency about paramutual betting on horse races, President Smith said that the position of the church has always been against horse racing on Sunday.
All right. Nice. On Sunday. All right.
July 14th, Presiding Bishop LeGrand Richards approves the installation of a cigarette vending machine in the bus terminal of the church's Temple Square Hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, right. we're getting with the times, man. People need to smoke. Oh, my God. I got at least one more here. First Counselor J. Reuben Clark, he had a lot to say back then, writes that the general authorities of the church get precious little from the tithing of the church. They're not paid as much as a first-class stenographic secretary of some of the men who run industry. So that's worded funny. But, yeah, he's basically comparing their wage. But he says from the tithing of the church. So he's pretty much admitting they're paid from tithing funds.
I just don't get it. Like, how things could be blatantly stated like that from church authorities off and on. And you've shared several of these things. And the members so quickly forget.
And that's it.
Yeah,
they just forget, because as soon as they heard it, it kind of went into a certain part of their brain, which is the "I didn't just hear that" part of their brain.
Yeah, yeah.
One more, and now we'll be in 1950. Uh-huh. At the funeral of a man who died 6 weeks after his appointment as stake president, because that calling was inspired, Apostle Joseph Fielding Smith tells Apostle Harold B. Lee, "If you've called a man to a position in this church and he dies the next day, that position will have a bearing on what he is called to do when he leaves this earth."
And that
kind of teaching is pervasive in the church, that, you know, you're tying this world with the next, and one influences the other. And so, yeah, he's obviously a stake president in the next life now. Or whatever position, yeah.
Sure, because God needs those. Yeah.
And God knew that, so it didn't matter if he died the next day or the next week, because he still gets to fulfill the calling in the next life.
Wow.
God, that's sweet. God,
very sweet.
God really does love us.
Well, I appreciate the share, and, you know, yeah, thanks. Thanks for the avid... Yeah, but applause there, folks. I appreciate that. The audience is kind of dead today. I don't know what's going on with it. Yeah, you guys suck. How about liven up a little bit? All right. Well, speaking of livening up, I think everybody's going to want to give it up for part two here, where we're going to start with Mr. Mitch Shira again. And then we are going to bring out Gordon Hinckley after that. So everybody give it up for Mitch Shira. Let's, yeah, now they woke up.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Yeah.
Happy to be back.
All right. Yes, I appreciate it. Whoa, you got left audience, right audience going on here.
Wow. Now, based on that response,
yeah,
I hate to say it, Mike, but you and I suck and Mitch rocks.
Yeah, that's thanks, guys. We love you too. Damn, what did we do to get all this animosity in our audience? Anyway, thanks for joining us again, Mitch. We got cut off a little sooner than we wanted to last time as we were talking, and so thanks for coming back and being willing to, I guess,
my pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, definitely, man. So let's jump right in, as they say, Mitch.
All right.
Yes. So let's start with the end. I feel a little do-re-mi coming on in, Dave.
That's the great song by the Doors.
Yeah.
"This is the end, my only friend, the end."
Huh. Yeah. I totally remember that one.
Yeah, me too. Me
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So... So let's jump into the end. We're kind of wrapping up the two little final topics there with you. The one being the summarization, if you will, of like the pain, the cost associated with leaving the church when you are one of those people who was really committed. and you gave us some thoughts around that, and including the whole conversation we had about the main things that made you start that whole transition to begin with, right? And start questioning the church, etc. So I'd like to cap on that a little bit. I have a couple specific questions. I'm sure you might have some too, Dave. And then we'll move from there into just a couple more of your thoughts, Mitch, if you will, about, like, you know, some of the things you've discovered. You talked about some of that light at the end of the tunnel that you're already experiencing. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
happy to, you know, hear more from you on a couple of those things. So let's...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Thanks, man. So let's take it into the first part, being the pain and so forth again. So my mind usually goes to this fact before us that it's been a while now since you kind of like stopped going to church, right? And so mm-hmm. if you look at the events that have unfolded since then, mm-hmm. and I'm sure like the Sunday you stopped, right? Like your whole family wasn't like suddenly aware that you were leaving the church and so forth, unless you share some telepathic gift with your family that we're not aware of. So when did they, how long were you out, so to speak, before the topic came up with family? And yeah, let's start.
Oh boy.
There. Yeah.
So with, I guess, my ex's family, mm-hmm. they were pretty aware because, you know, my ex was pretty involved with them and would, and I wasn't afraid to not completely say I'm not going to go to church, but I wasn't afraid to just speak my mind about certain matters of the church and where I stood.
Yeah.
But with my family, I remember having a conversation with my dad when I was a progressive Mormon. Mm. And I remember that he was just so concerned for me, and which is a common thing with a lot of friends and family. I'm sure you too have experience yeah. as well of just like the concerned talk of like, hey, we love you, but we're just so concerned about you. Mm-hmm. And I remember bringing these issues up with my dad, and that was a big step for me, even as I was still Mormon, but I was on the path to hellfire and damnation, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a big step for me to be able to talk about my doubts, because as I mentioned before, my dad was so stalwart, and he is still so stalwart in the church. He's very faithful, very traditional Mormon. Mm. And I was afraid to bring these issues up, but I did. And it was actually a really good conversation, but it was also disheartening because I remember him telling me, because it was after I had read the CES letter, so I was well on my way to making the decision to leave.
Yeah.
And he told me when I was bringing up these issues, I was like, I don't know if Joseph Smith was a prophet anymore. I don't believe he was. And there's so many issues with what he did, and there's so many issues in my mind and heart with what so many leaders of this church have done that I don't agree with it. And I brought up polygamy. I said, I don't believe in polygamy. I don't believe it was ever a thing, that it was what Joseph Smith claimed it was.
Right. From God.
Revelation from God.
Yeah.
And that it was to be practiced. And I remember the look on my dad's face. Just like it seemed like he was struck with awe. He was just like, what?
Wow.
So you're saying these men, what they say is revelation, aren't revelation? And then he started quoting scripture from the Old Testament and the New Testament and the Book of Mormon, the DNC. And
wow.
Mm-hmm. It was freeing for me. It was really a really hard conversation, but I remember it was so freeing for me to be able to start finally
somewhere
speaking what was yeah. on my heart
yeah.
without shelving, because I think shelving is a common thing that members do when they have these questions, because quite frankly, they're told to in a roundabout way. They're told to put those things aside. If you don't understand, God understands. So pray about it, study about it. But if you don't get the answers, maybe we'll understand more in the next life, or maybe the prophet will speak about this, or XYZ. And I remember at that point, I think I was starting to understand that I wasn't going to get the answers that I was looking for from the Mormon God.
Yeah.
That what the true answers that I had were already with me in my heart. And it was, I know my dad was really disappointed in me.
Yeah.
But it was freeing. It was hard, but really freeing to be able to finally start expressing my concerns. Yeah. And
so before that conversation with your father, he had no inkling that you had these issues, what I'm hearing.
I think he kind of did, because I posted on Facebook, I posted a blog about my faith struggles and about Joseph Smith, but it was I didn't bash Joseph Smith. I wasn't like, fuck this guy. Yeah. Who does he think he is? It was a very Mormon apologetic-esque blog. Like, mm-hmm. We don't understand the time back then. We don't understand this. And so I was making my, I had written this blog a while before he and I talked. And so I was at a different place mm-hmm. when he and I talked. So I think it was, so yes, to answer your question, he did kind of know, but I think he didn't understand or even realize that I was already on the path to hell.
So he might be thinking as you're talking, oh my God, it's worse than I thought. So
Yes, definitely. I think it was in that arena.
Right. If we could, and I think this would be of the most value to our listeners and potential listeners, certainly I have an interest because it happened to me. Could mm-hmm. you talk a little about your relationship with your spouse and how ultimately that was dissolved and that part of the cost?
Yeah. Right? And that's something that I'm still like that. I work through that because, as I've mentioned before, I was, to begin with, the relationship with my ex-spouse wasn't very, I fed into that narrative that the church gave me ever since I was young to a returned missionary and to seeking out a wife.
Yes.
I guess you could put it that way. And so I was only looking for a partner that had a testimony and had those same values of the gospel, mm-hmm. because that's what's taught. That's one of those things that you say, even if you don't have anything in common, the gospel is all you need in common, because mm-hmm. that's eternal salvation.
That's exactly how it's put, and so damaging. Mm-hmm. As long as your spouse or future spouse has a testimony of the gospel and you do, it'll all work out. Yeah. There's this magic thing called the temple, and if you're married there, you'll have an eternal marriage, even if you can't stand each other. It doesn't really fucking so much damage. Anyway, go on, please.
Yeah, so with that mindset, I had met my ex-wife, and we began to date, and that's basically all we had in common. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we were attracted to each other, and we had that going for us. But I just, throughout our marriage, and it wasn't until we started having kids that became the other common thing that we had, and that mm-hmm. connected us. Mm-hmm. But that was it. It was the gospel and our kids. And I take responsibility for that. That's why I say I still work through that, because I know, the church taught me that, but I had those warning flags in my heart mm-hmm. before we got married, and as we were married, I remember just realizing, like, holy shit, I don't have anything in common with this woman. Mm. Like, I don't really connect with her. I don't have that deep connection that you look for in a partner.
In a partner, yep.
Uh-huh. And the deep connection was the gospel. We understood the gospel. We were both very strong in it. And so, to answer your question in a roundabout way, when I decided to step away from the church officially and say I can't, and I hadn't said I'm no longer a member, I remember telling her that I needed to take a break from the church, that was one of the things that was detrimental to our relationship, because that's all we had. And granted, there are, I'm not going to pretend that the church was the only problem and solution holding us together. We had other issues that we had been working through, but that was a big one, mm-hmm. a big, big one. And the issues came about, the other issues, because we didn't, at least I believe, we didn't connect. We didn't have that connection. And so we were always struggling to be on the same page or to connect deeply on levels mm-hmm. that we couldn't. And so it was really disheartening.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds a lot like this guy I know. His name's Dave. that's pretty much exactly what I went through. I proposed to my ex because Ezra Taft Benson said, if you're 26 and not married, you're losing it. You're going the way of the world, and mm-hmm, Satan mm-hmm. got you by the nads and or whatever. And I proposed to a woman I hardly knew. And mm-hmm. as I got to know her, I got to know that we don't have anything in common. God,
uh-oh.
It's yeah. so sad. And that damage, yes, you have your personal freedom to choose, but all mm-hmm. of that training and upbringing that tells you that you must do that and you must do it quick. And you that's the only important part of the relationship. How many marriages have been ruined? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, and it's very true, because not only, even if you take those teachings and about marriage that the LDS Church puts out of get married, only have this in common, even if you only have this in common, still get married. But even even looking back, I realized that I applied so many things about the gospel to my own decision making, because again, that's what we're taught. Yep. We apply everything. It's not just in yep. some categories, it's everything. And so I remember having those doubts before our marriage, huge, major, major doubts, like, hey, whoa, hit the brakes. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And I shelved them and I labeled it as, this is Satan. This mm-hmm. is Satan. I'm about to go to the temple with my eternal companion. And this is what Satan does. He comes in and says, no, 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 Mitch, you're not supposed to do this. Mm. You're marrying the wrong person. And it was, no, I can't listen to that. And that was my choice. And I understand that. But at the same time, I look back through my healing over the last couple of years, understanding that those are conditioned behaviors. Those yes. are learned behaviors that so many members do. And I do understand that there are also, I have so many friends that are still in the church, or one, I know I have actually a family member that's out of the church and his wife is still in it. And so I don't mean to make a blanketed statement saying, you know, if you're a Mormon, then this is what all Mormons do.
Right. Of course.
Because I know that there are lots of Mormons that did find their soulmate or someone that they connected with so deeply aside from the gospel, but it's still a damaging teaching that has to be done away with.
So those whisperings from Satan, I have to mm-hmm. chime in real quickly. As I was dating my wife at the time, or future wife, I had a period of doubt that she was the one for me, and confusion. And I didn't call her, didn't stop by to see her for mm-hmm. several days. And instead of understanding that that was my heart telling me, she's not the one for you, move on, I apologized. I said, I'm sorry for being such an ass the last, week or two. Mm-hmm. Please forgive me. So I got to just squelch, just completely snuff out my own true feelings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And God damn, the church is good at doing that. Pisses me off.
Yeah.
But again, I made the decision, so I own that. I get to own that. Mm-hmm. But I believe it was heavily influenced by those teachings.
Of course it was.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And Mitch, as you look forward then from those, so you talk about two very difficult situations there that you addressed. One is with your dad and having mm-hmm. that courage and wherewithal, whatever word you want to use to say, look, I'm going to get this off my chest. I'm going to reveal how I really feel about things to my dad, who I love and I respect, and who, as you shared with us last time, helped you get on the track or get back on the track of, you know, following the church closely and doing that. And interestingly for you, as you explained during that time of your life, when you were that age, at that phase, et cetera, what was going on in your life, all combined, mm-hmm. that was a good thing for you. It was a good thing to have
yes.
something to hold on to, something that was, that would create a little order out of the chaos in your feelings and in your life. And mm-hmm. your dad helped you with that. So looking back at all that and the pain and the realization of, you know, I'm sure there was a part of you that felt, I was thinking this when you just shared the story now with us, of how there would have to be a part of me during that whole process where I almost felt like I was spitting in my dad's face or like throwing mm-hmm. that back at him and saying, yeah, remember when you helped mm-hmm. me out and I really needed it back then? I don't value that, right? Which you yeah. do. And that would be a lie that you didn't value that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure he felt that he wasn't betrayed, right? Or wasn't
yeah.
thrown back mm-hmm. at him. And how is your relationship today? If you look at both of those people, your dad and now your ex-spouse, how does that look today?
So with my dad, it's improving. And it, I do feel fortunate. I know my dad disagrees with my lifestyle now, and he disagrees with the way, I guess, my own personal beliefs and leaving the church. And for a while, there was some awkward moments, but we always would connect and call each other off and on. I would call him. Actually, mm-hmm. I would be the one that usually reached out to call him and say hi and check in with him. But for a while there, it was really hard. It was really hard to connect. And it's, to be honest, sometimes it still is, because kind of the same theme. With my dad, the gospel is his passion. And so I remember as a teenager and a young adult, I would just stay up late nights with him just talking about the gospel or talking about life and applying it to the gospel. And mm-hmm. that was our connection. It was so deep, and it wasn't our only connection,
yeah,
but it was a huge one. And so when I said, I'm done with this gospel, I think, and I don't blame him, because I often try to put myself in his shoes. If I was still Mormon and my kids grew up and left, I think I would feel like a failure.
Yeah.
And there's another thing that we could dive into about how the church kind of puts out this idea of like, don't let your kids leave, or don't
yeah.
you know, save your souls, save the saving grace of Christ, or if you leave the church, you know, where will you go, kind of thing.
Well, and the whole whole load that they put on parents, right? Of
yes.
washing your garments of the blood of your children, yes. and all these very Judaic Old Testament horrific symbols that they present to parents of, and the Book of Mormon doesn't do a whole lot better as it jumps into it. It's not as graphic usually, but just even verses like, hey, you know, teach your kids to do right, teach them not to contend, teach them. And when you don't have these perfect kids who are perfectly following the church's teachings, the shame mm-hmm. and the feeling of failure and so forth that promotes. Well,
not yeah. only the internal feeling of shame and maybe even guilt, or like, what did we do wrong?
Right.
I thought we had all the right meetings and went everywhere we were supposed to go and read the scripture. We did everything and they still left. It's also looking sideways mm-hmm. because you're looking at your, you know, members of your ward, your neighborhood,
oh, yeah.
who are become aware of the fact that your kids have gone inactive, let's say, and you can't really look them in the face
yeah.
the way you used to yeah, anymore.
It's a failure. It's a failure.
Fuck.
Yeah.
What a fucked up system.
Yeah, wow. Everybody loses also, in that way.
One of the biggest things that the church totes around is eternal families, and it's honestly the most damning, in my opinion, because yeah. it only applies if you are following and doing and following that conditioned behavior. And once you step outside of that, the shame starts, and shame within yourself, shame in your community and your family, because what are they thinking? They're not going, you know what? this church isn't for everyone. They're going, dude, your eternal salvation's at stake, and now we can't be together forever as a family.
Yeah.
I don't know how to deal with you right now. So yeah. I got to get you back. And that's so damning to, it's not only damning, it's abusive. It can be so abusive to promote that shame and just, and sometimes it's, most of the time, I think it's unspoken. It's just how they sometimes look at you or disconnect from you because they don't know how to talk to you now.
Right.
You've left the fold.
I was just thinking, if you were to create a system that creates the most of that, the most abusive environment, might be the Mormon church.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, the cultish aspects of it.
For sure. And, you know, there's similarities in other organizations that have been talked about by people like the Jehovah's Witness and some others, and some of the crazy extremities that institutions go to, such as Scientology, where you essentially disown members of your family and so forth. And I get it, but it is very extreme, right? Like, you have to really think hard about any institutions that would trump the silent room of the heart, right? As you were kind of alluding, Mitch, where a lot of this damage, if not most of it, takes place, whether that be at the individual level or the family level or whatever, and whether you be the instigator or the recipient, there's all these instances where real deep harm comes and real deep pain. And thankfully, through that, if we're following our authentic selves, we can find some solace, at least for ourselves. You know, we can find some integrity, as you mentioned a few times when we spoke earlier about the importance of being true to yourself, right? And following your own heart and your own self. And so if you were to take that, I know we only talked a couple things there, and there's so many different aspects beyond your prior marriage and that relationship, your dad, and that, how you're working on that. And there's so many other things we could talk about there. I mean, as you think beyond that for a moment, and I know you touched on this a little in our part one together, some of the light. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about some of the pain that took place, some of the ways that you're still dealing with that and trying to address that and make sense out of it and, you know, work with it. And beyond those relationships for you personally, give the listeners a couple thoughts as to the light that you discovered. And if they're wondering right now, right, like, hey, I'm going through some of what Mitch just talked about, I don't know if it's worth it.
Maybe they haven't experienced some of the freedom, some of the genuineness, some of living from the heart, or they're just starting to. And yeah, that's a really good question, Mike. They might be wondering, God, did I make a mistake? Yeah. If they're right in that middle ground there, and you've clearly passed into that area where the rewards are far outweighing the cost, I would say. It sounds like
it is really terrifying at first, and to be honest, I think it takes a while to shed those conditioned thoughts and behaviors to where you're thinking that you're wrong. Who you are is wrong. And I think right there is one of the biggest things that you begin to shed is self-shaming and the idea that you are either making a mistake or that you are a mistake because of what we just talked about. You know, if you've left your family or are the cause of your family's split, quote unquote, then that shame of, oh, the eternal family's been broken, and you can carry that with you, but the minute you start shedding those conditioned thoughts and behaviors, the minute I started understanding that, hey, no, I am good. I made this decision because I follow the light in my heart, and you learn to trust yourself, trust those gut feelings, because they're there for a reason. All those gut feelings are there for, you know yourself more than anyone. And so if your gut is saying to you, this isn't right, guess what? It's not. Chances are it's not right. It's wrong. And you follow that and you become more confident. I've become more and more confident than I've ever been. And even that, I mean, some Mormons can look at that and be like, oh, he's prideful. Look at him. He's prideful. Look what he's doing. He's saying he's confident, self-reliance, all that bastard, get him out of the church. Like it's not, but that should tell you right there. Like what, who in their right mind would say, don't ever be confident in yourself to the point where you're more confident about yourself than you are of the prophet. Oh, ton.
Yeah, no, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm thinking as you're talking, there's almost these, well, of course there are. There are phases that everybody goes through, and those phases look a little different, and they may even be in slightly different orders for different people. And we're talking about things like the phases of grief, the phases of separation, you know, that you feel. And people may not appreciate it fully sometimes that when we talk about, I think we brought this up last time, when we talk about leaving an institution like this that you were really, truly committed to, that's always the caveat, not talking about people who were lucky enough that they didn't really fully buy into it. But those of us who did, it is definitely the true definition of a psychological trauma. And there are phases that we as humans go through, right? When we're dealing with trauma, and there's grief stages and all this other kind of stuff. And without delving into all the steps of grief and all that kind of stuff that we could talk about with that. Although I think it'd be great to have somebody on the show at some point, Dave, that can walk through that with us, a counselor, a therapist, you know, to talk about these stages that people should expect as they leave the church.
You can, I know there's another podcast, Ex Mormonology.
Yeah.
You should reach out to her. I bet she would love to.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. Thanks, Mitch.
She talks about leaving Mormonism. She's a therapist, and it's actually helped me a ton.
That's great. Yeah. And so, you know, it is a process, but I thought as you were talking through all of that, there's this point that you discover where it's okay to be you. And then there's a point beyond that. And it's a step in grief that is often forgotten as far as the stages that people commonly talk about. And that's a step or a stage where you can actually not just be okay with being yourself, you can thrive. So I'm not just okay with it. I'm thriving as myself, and I'm discovering true happiness. And that is the light at the end of the tunnel that we're talking about. And it's not, to your point, Mitch, you know, something you realize day two, right? After you leave the church.
Oh,
it is a path. And sometimes we discover pieces of it, right? And it's not like a destination per se, but it's an experience. And so, you know, so much good there. Thank you, you know, for sharing some of the difficult points, the thoughts on the light there. I want to bring Gordon out because last time, I feel bad, last time we didn't have enough time for him. And he walked up all those stairs to his point. And then we told him, we got to end, Gordon. Yeah. And there's a couple things. We have some questions for Gordon. And then also I heard Rusty Nail. We just had our assistant run out here. You probably were wondering who the heck is that. So they've been trying to call, and they got a hold of Rusty, and he said he's going to call in and clarify his stance on this racial thing, this racial comment he made, and why it does mesh with the scriptures or whatever. And so I think it's an ideal opportunity to let Gordon and Rusty chat for a minute on that topic.
I would love to hear that.
Oh yeah, because I think Gordon's not going to be happy with it. I'm just guessing.
I can already tell.
Let's give it up, everybody.
Quite truthfully, the truth be known, the brethren have always had severe differences.
Oh, for sure.
Because when you're getting revelation from one God, of course, your answers vary widely.
Yeah.
That only makes sense because it's all coming from that one true God. No, historically, lots of division.
Yeah, we've talked about some of those in Dave's segment, in the free information segment, some of the crazy outlandish, you know, absolute contradictions and disagreements with the brethren over time. And of course, all that's hidden from the members. That's never talked about. But yeah, these guys disagree with them with each other all the time. So yeah, let's bring Gordon out, and I think he's ready. I don't he didn't get lost this time. So good. Hey, come on out, Gordon. Hey, buddy. So good to see you again.
Thank you.
Yeah, love
it. Oh yes, thank you. Thank you.
Excellent. All right.
Where should I sit?
Scoot there. Right there next to me, Dave and Mitch, if you don't mind scooting down one chair.
Awesome. Make sure he's got his walker so he can get back up. Hang on. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. What are you saying, Dave?
Well, you know, the way you were wobbling there, I was just concerned. I thought
I like to wobble. You ever think of that?
Oh, you were dancing. It was purposeful. I see. Okay.
Oh, yes. I guess you could call it that.
Yeah, right. All right. Well,
also holding in a big shit last time as well. We all have to wobble, you know what I mean. You wobble out of the door.
Answers another important question. I guess resurrected people like to eat.
Yeah.
Well, of course we do. Why wouldn't we?
I don't know. I just was worried that I'd get to heaven and there's no food.
Oh, there's food. Oh, food. It's one of the great joys of heaven and being resurrected. Why would we come back and not eat?
Yeah,
that's a dumb question.
Well, I'm only mortal, so
yeah,
sorry.
That's true. We're not.
I forgive you.
Well, thank you, Gordon. Yeah, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So we had a couple questions we wanted to ask you last time, and we ran out of time, and we appreciate your patience coming back. I know that was kind of a pain. So
Of course. I'm trying to still learn patience.
Yeah.
So bear with me.
Yeah, well, we are. Thanks for bearing with us. So one of the questions that came up, Gordon, and we've got an old associate of yours that I think is waiting on the phone, and we'll patch him through in a second. I guess it's not a fully revealed point right now that some of you have been resurrected, you being like some prior Mormon leaders, church leaders.
Yes.
And even in the leadership of the church today, I guess it's kind of a secret. This person just found out. And so I think he's interested in talking to you. And we also invited him to chime in. And I think this is perfect timing, Gordon, with you being back here with us. We asked him about some of his comments that he made in the conference that just happened over this weekend here about the church's stance on racism. And we know.
Oh, boy, this ought to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We know you have some feelings about that. And probably some new ways of looking at it, maybe, you know. So let's bring him on first. So this is, we call him Rusty Nell by kind of a joke.
Oh, Rusty.
Gordon.
Oh, okay.
But Russell M. Nelson, as you know, current president of the church, he talked in conference recently about, you know, basically kind of reprimanding the members if they have any racism in their hearts at all, which I think is a good message, but may not jive with what was taught earlier. What do you think, Gordon, before we bring Rusty on here?
It's all bullshit. The whole thing. All hogwash. So anything that any current prophet says, I don't have any compassion for any longer. So I'll let him hear it.
Okay. Well, right. I think we're going to dial him in, Dave. Let me just see if I can connect this. Okay. Hold on. Hello. Is this Russell, Mr. Nelson?
Yes. This is Russell Nelson.
Thank you. You are live. We're broadcasting over the stage here on Mormon Talk.
I would like to say that I'm extremely appreciative of this opportunity to preach the Word of God.
Well, great. We've got somebody we want to talk with you about something you said in conference over the weekend here, your words of advice around racism in the church and how damaging that is, and that as members of the church.
I'm proud of those comments, and I will say them again if needed.
Okay. Well, we appreciate that. We've got an old friend of yours, And I think you just found out today that he's actually back on Earth with us, as it were.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I'm excited to talk to him.
Oh, well, if it isn't Mr. Do you have some water, Mike?
Yeah, there you go, right there.
You've got a lump in my...
I got some whiskey. Would you be interested in a shot?
Oh, no. That'll just make me more angry. Don't give me any whiskey.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, if it isn't Mr. Russell Nelson.
Yes. Hello, Gordon. It's good to see you again.
Well, your logic is dumb, Rusty. You're on the phone. Don't you know that? Stupid son of a bitch.
Wow. Wow.
Wow.
I will not be a part of something that is so hateful, Gordon. The Gordon I knew would not say such things.
Well, I've changed, goddammit. And I hear that you've been peddling this Mormon shit. I thought I came to you in that dream, Rusty. I came to you in that dream, and I told you that you needed to stop. You needed to stop. And what are you doing? You're still peddling this racist shit.
To be fair, I thought that that was not the dream that was from God. I thought it was from Satan himself.
What? How much clearer can I get? I appeared to... We're not going to go off on that. Listen, what did you say about race? That you're sorry for it? Did you say you're sorry, Rusty?
I think, Mr. Nelson, in your defense, you said that racism is terrible. We shouldn't have racist thoughts in our heart.
That's right. I said that we should not have racist thoughts. I offered my condolences to so many of the African-American communities that have suffered such hate.
What about you? What about the church, Rusty? Did you know that the church was a part of that? Did you know that?
I don't like to talk about that very much, Gordon. If we could just defer to a different topic.
No. Oh,
so no. That's convenient, Rusty. So as soon as you're faced with the truth, you turn tail.
Truth is very simple. Truth is truth. I would like to say that once truth is spoken, it's spoken. And I have spoken as the arbiter of God. Don't make fun of me, sir. I am a heart surgeon.
Yeah.
Let's to keep things civil. To keep
please
things,
go ahead, though.
Yeah.
Feel
to
free.
Keep things civil, guys. I think we just had one thought, one question, Mr. Nelson, and that is about the apparent dichotomy between the message given that was a very beautiful, loving message this last conference and the historical teachings of the church, which weren't as friendly toward other races, and how that kind of works together when it's all supposed to be coming from prophets, from God.
Well, I would love to address that question. You see, back in the... And so... There's...
I think we lost him.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that's just convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a little too convenient.
I pulled that trick. It's an old, oldest trick in the hat. No pun intended.
What trick are you referencing, Mr. Hinckley?
Whenever you're faced with a tough question about the history or things that the church has done, the phone either conveniently disconnects or you just change the subject.
Oh, yeah, I get that. Speaking of which, you know, I think you'll get a kick out of this, Gordy, because it's a little bit of, I don't want to say deja vu. It's a little bit of nostalgia, maybe, and also maybe some embarrassment from before. Not terrible embarrassment, but Dave and I had some questions about some comments that you made back in the day, as they say. And so
yes.
You will recall clearly, I'm sure, you had some conversations with a Mr. Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good
old Mike. And then you had a conversation with Larry King on Larry King Live.
Oh, yes, I remember that as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, Dave, I think you had a question or two, some direct questions that Mr. Wallace asked Gordy back then, and how Gordy responded and how he might respond today.
Mike Wallace.
Go ahead, Dave.
He asked you in some language similar to this, do you mean to tell me that an uneducated young farm boy was the founder of your church? To which you answered, well, that's the beauty of it.
I didn't say that. Well, that's the beauty of it. And I was a very, I don't like to look back at those with a lot of pride.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If I were to answer again, if he were to ask me that and I were to be a regular good old human being, I would have said something like, you know what? You're fucking right. There's some red flags there. I don't know. I better look into that.
Thank you for the clarification and the update. Oh,
of course.
It's so refreshing. So refreshing to hear that from you, Gordon. Yeah. Wasn't there another one, Dave?
He asked about the priesthood.
Yeah.
You answered a couple of different questions. Well, those are the blips of history.
That's right. Yeah. Let's not worry about the blips in history. Let's look forward.
Yes, I did say that. And again, if I were to have this interview redone, I would have apologized. I would have said that the actions that have taken place throughout our history have been atrocious. Mm. And that we are sorry for the pain that we've caused in the name of God.
Wow.
And then if I were to be more frank, I would have said, this church is a shit show. I don't know why I'm still in it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I join with our crowd. I'm standing. Dave, you want to stand with me here?
Yeah, sure. Now.
We're giving you a standing ovation, Mr. Gordon Hinckley.
Oh, praise Gordy, you, sir. Gordy, here's a question. Yes. Does everyone who's resurrected have this change, this paradigm shift, this change of heart and having their eyes opened? Or is it just certain people like you and some others?
Well, that's a very good question. I had my paradigm shift, probably 2 millennia ago.
Wow.
But eternity is eternity. It took me a while to open my eyes to see what I had done. And once I did, I felt terrible, absolutely terrible.
Help us understand so a lot that. Of, go ahead. Sorry. No, you go ahead, please.
Oh, no. Go. Interrupt me again. Go.
Are you being a jerk when you're saying that, or are you just kind of elbowing me? There, Gordon.
Oh, I'm elbowing. Okay. I'm elbowing. Come on. You don't know my sense of humor by now.
Yeah. For instance, Gordy, let's say Tommy was resurrected.
He was.
If he can't.
He and was. He came I, back, I've
and his eyes were opened as well. So I'm just wondering, is this just for everybody? That's awesome.
That's a good question. Is it just the former leaders of the church, like you and Tommy, Gordon, or is it like everybody has this epiphany, so to speak?
Well, progression, one thing that the Mormon church had right is the progression. Truth, we will all come to what is truth. And so when we continue to learn that throughout the eternities, we learn that the mistakes that we've made, and I just like to say that I came to my truth a lot more than Tommy.
Oh, did you?
Sooner.
Wow. Okay.
He took a few millennia to get there. He was pretty stubborn. Well, rattling on about his spiritual experiences and all that bullshit.
Right. So, Gordy, could you sum up in just, you know, a couple of words your new truth about the Mormon Church?
Couple of words. Let's see. Bullshit.
That's two words.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's not true. It's a sham. And don't be fooled. The Mormon Church does not own what basic human rights and morals are. people will be good. People are good. And the Mormon church can't dictate that they have rights to all of those. We don't. They don't, to be honest. We never did.
Yeah.
So that's leave the church and you'll find that you're good. You're a wonderful person, that's just as you are.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thanks a lot.
It does. It does. And
you're welcome.
What a great opportunity, Gordon, for you to be able to come back around and give that message now. And that's terrific. It's something I never could have thought, you know, could have dreamed of would be, you know, would happen. And here you are. And so that's fantastic.
I mean, what kind of church? Who would be like, I'm going to join a church that tells me not to drink coffee? What the hell is that? Yeah, God's up. Some all-knowing God is up in heaven saying, well, look, Gordon, you did wonderful, but you drank that cup of coffee. So
You're
fucked, Gordon. You drink coffee. That should be the first warning sign. And don't chalk it up to being obedient. My ass. It's petty.
Well, I can see you're very animated and very passionate about this newfound truth.
I'm myself now. This wonderful thing. I can be myself.
Fantastic. Thanks again for joining us, Gordon and Mitch. It was so great to have you back. Thanks.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, man. I really appreciate it. We would love to have one or both of you back on the show, and we'll get, you know, our people will get with your people, as they say.
Yeah, I would love to return.
Yeah, me too. I love it. I love this platform. I love it.
I have a feeling that a lot of good has been done here, that this podcast will reach a lot of people and help a lot.
Me too.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think it will. Thank you so much, Gordon. The words that you said, some of those words today have been waited on for a lot of people or by a lot of people. And we have someone laughing.
Yes.
Dave, did you discover something?
What are you laughing at, Dave?
On the screen it says David, Michael, and God damn it.
Right, you're just noticing that?
Yeah, I haven't been looking at the screen.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Hey, on your way out, Gordon, if you wouldn't mind, can you grab a stick right there and help us? Can you help us round these guys up?
Oh, sure. Well, of course. What the hell are you doing with sheep on here?
Well,
that's not my job.
All right, come here.
Oh. Round them up yourself.
You'll be paying well.
Bitch.
I mean, okay.
Tell me to round up sheep. Is that what you have me here for? You round them up yourself. God damn it!
I have half a taco left over. If you're interested.
No, thank you. I learned my lesson. No more of those goddamn street tacos.
Oh, okay. We're back to that. I think that's our cue. We better wrap this up before more shenanigans.
Oh, start dirty calls. I just had a bunch of hot dogs, so they go through me too. I remember where the bathroom is. Right down these goddamn fucking stairs. Down this door to the left?
Yes, right there.
I got a new maid. This terrible stench. I think it's from the last time I was in this staff room. Terrible.
I think you backed the pipes up, Gordon.
I had a lot to do. Well, stop. I'm gonna go shit my brains out.
Okay. All right. Okay, buddy. Thanks, bud. We'll talk to everybody later. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate you guys.
All right. Thank you guys for having me on again.
Yeah. Oh, too much fun. Yes.